Hello, and thank you for listening to PolitiTalk with Lane Palmer. Today on my podcast, I have a good friend of mine named Devante. So Devante, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to have the political mindset that you have.
Let's see. So I was born and raised in Obetz, Ohio, which is kind of a little small town. It's actually considered a village. And there weren't many African-American families that lived there. I think in my neighborhood, there was probably like 2 to 3 other African-American families. So I definitely grew up like experiencing a lot of racism and prejudices. And I think for me, my kind of political views definitely stemmed from those experiences. So I definitely like always go towards who supports equality or who supports like basic human rights or just like human rights in general. So I would consider myself liberal. I grew up very conservative, like my whole family's Christians, very church oriented, but we've always like felt like people should be treated equally. Mm-hmm. So it was never, we were never like Republicans, we've always been Democratic. But I think like in the current like climate that we're in, like, I think like we've seen like a lot of just like with the Black Lives Matter movement and the whole election right now, like I've seen like so many people that I've grown up with in my hometown, like kind of like shown their true colors, like people that I have been friends with for years, like that I would have never thought that I would have thought would have spoken up more like during that era in time, like were more so like in support of like cops versus like, you know, these Black lives that were lost. So it's been like an interesting few months, I would say, like just adjusting to everything that's going on and like as like an African-American person. So
yeah, what were some of the like the racist things that would happen that you noticed like growing up in the town that you grew up in?
Yeah, so interesting. I would always get this like feedback a lot where I would be told by like my friend's parents, we like you because you don't act Black. So I think for them in their head, they associated Black people with being ghetto. And if you didn't act ghetto, then you acted white. Mm-hmm. So, and that goes both ways too, because like I have family members who say like, you act white or you try to act white. But to me, it's like to associate white people with like speaking well and being educated, and then to say that if a Black person acts that way, then they're trying to act white, that like kind of minimizes Black people like from both ends. So it's interesting to hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah. What's so funny is I actually took like a bias training that I had to do for work a couple of days ago. And it was talking about how there is conscious bias and there's unconscious bias, mm-hmm. where like people could do something, but they don't really know that they're doing it. Like, yeah. Do you think these people are fully aware of like what they're saying when they say things like that? Or do you think they like, they know what they're saying?
I definitely think that it's conscious. I think it's just ignorance, you know? I think it's like one of those things where it's like, you can get away with saying it. So it's like, if a white person were to say the hard R, you know, there would be like repercussions for it. But if they say like something like, oh, you act white, it's going to turn people's heads, but it's not going to, you know, it's not going to cause like altercation sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like one of those things where it's like you get a free pass to say ignorant stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and back to your point on just the whole Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, I know that it started gaining a lot more media attention around 2014, especially. Why do you think now in 2020, that it's kind of reached a tipping point? Do you think people are just fed up? Do you think that more people are aware of that these things are happening now? Like, why is it the way that it is now?
I definitely think that it has a lot to do with like our president, our current president. And I think that a lot of the racial issues that have kind of been in the back burner have kind of come forward during his presidency. there's a lot more like division between black people and white people. And I think it stems from him. Like, you know, you have this president who is saying, like, let's build a wall. You know, immigrants don't matter. And I think that that's kind of like empowered racist and prejudiced people to be more comfortable. You know, if your leader, the leader of your country, is someone who is, you know, very openly prejudiced, I feel like it almost makes you entitled to share your opinions more.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, they see this and they go, okay, we have this president who has, you know, this ideology that is similar to mine. He's vocalizing it, so I'm going to vocalize it. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're seeing a lot of that now, where people have almost become bold to the point where it's like, people who wouldn't have said, you know, things years ago about, you know, racial issues are now speaking up about it, sort of thing. And that's on both sides. But I don't know. I think just that ignorance just manifests a lot more under Trump.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that. It's interesting that you use the word opinion, because to me, whenever somebody's spouting off something like that, it just is hate to me. How do we get people to understand that the things that they say really matters, and the things that they say are actually incorrect or not, I don't even know how to phrase it. Like, how do we push past people having this negative idea in their head of other people of other races?
I think that just stems from like experience, and you know, you have to almost like want to put yourself in a position to get to know someone. Like, if you're a white person who doesn't have much interaction with black people and you want to actually change, you have to like make a conscious effort to get to know African Americans or, you know, black people, whatever. You have to like, you know, try to develop friendships with people or reach out to people, have conversations with people. Like, it could be a simple one-on-one sit down with somebody to just kind of like see their perspective of it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of like conservatives who were like really like deeply rooted in their beliefs, like, it's hard to change them. Like, I feel like our generation of people, whether black or white, whatever, all in between, like, we can have a conversation with each other and we can kind of, you know, change how we feel about things. We can, you know, see other people's sides. We can try to, you know, accept how other people feel. But I feel like, you know, these older generations of like conservatives are just like so hell-bent on their beliefs, like, just like Christians, like, that older generation of Christians, like, they don't understand like why we do the things that we do, or like, you know, they understand that God like forgives, you know, regardless of like whether you're LGBT or, you know, regardless of what you do, like, there's forgiveness. But they still like think in their head, like, if you're LGBT or if you, you know, do certain sins, like, you'll go to hell, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, there's no convincing them. And I feel like that's the same way with like politics. You can't convince someone who's so strong in their beliefs to change. Mm-hmm. You can, it just takes a lot of effort. And I don't think like, not too many people care enough to like put in that kind of work.
Mm. Yeah. I had the ability to actually interview, a pastor, actually a couple of months ago for the podcast, and he was talking about how he kind of had to shift away from voting Republican usually because of how bad Trump was for the party, and how he believed that Trump didn't embody a lot of the religious beliefs that he embodied. Mm-hmm. How important is your religion when it comes to the political realm?
That's a good question. I would say that religion plays a big part from a moral standpoint. Like, for me, I always look at, you know, who's more morally correct. Like, if I'm comparing the two, if I'm comparing Trump and I'm comparing Biden, and I look at it from like a moral aspect, you know, Biden wins by a landslide. I think Trump, you know, is prejudiced. I truly feel that way. I feel like he has like a lot of ignorances. And I see like small changes already, like with Biden not even being, you know, officially inaugurated, like more women are, you know, in the Senate, and more like I'm seeing like trans individuals, and, you know, you're seeing more, it become more current and more accepting and more open. And I think like from like a religious standpoint, I'm always focused on who is more morally correct. So like, I think that like,
not just by saying it, but like showing it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like, you have Trump, who's like, you know, obviously a Christian, who, you know, throws in little, you know, God bless America, or, you know, one nation under God, etc. But his actions don't reflect that of like what a true Christian is, you know, someone who radiates love. And I think like at a true Christian's core is love. And I don't see love in Trump. I don't see like a loving person. I don't see someone who wants to radiate love, who wants to, you know, radiate positivity. I just see someone who likes attention, and, you know, to me, that's not what a true Christian embodies.
Yeah. One of the things that when I was talking to a lot of my friends who are Christian, had an issue with voting for Biden was Kamala Harris and her stance on the topic of abortion rights and women's rights. Did that ever play a factor for you, or like, did that even ever come up in your mind as something that might swayed you from voting for Biden?
No, because like, I really like feel like women should have the rights to do what they want with their body. Like, I don't, you know, I can't ever see myself telling a woman like, you're ready to be a mother, or have this kid and live with the fact that you couldn't raise it, so you had to give it away, or whatever the case may be. It's like, why bring a life into this world if you're not truly ready for it? Mm-hmm. You know, because like a lot of these kids, like, they go through like foster care, and they go through like all these traumatic experiences, and it's like some of these people end up like super broken, like, and, you know, and it all stems from the fact that like their parent couldn't get an abortion, or, you know, they chose to keep them and give them away for adoption, or whatever the case may be. And I just feel like, why even go through that? So I don't know, like, that is an interesting, like, topic to ask, like, a Christian, someone who is a Christian, because, like, I don't know, I truly don't, like, I haven't really thought about it from, like, the Christian perspective of, like, you know, life and all this different things, but, you know, I just feel like women should be able to do what they want with their body, and I feel like if a woman wants to have an abortion, then let a woman have an abortion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and a lot of my Christian friends also share that belief that you're talking about as well. I mean, you know, essentially they believe that, like, it's not my right to judge others on what they decide to do.
Right.
So I'm still going to vote for this candidate regardless. And I think it is the reason why Biden did get so many more votes than Trump did, especially you saw a lot of people shift in the religious community from voting from Trump to Biden, which I think was a big factor. Unfortunately, a lot of demographics actually Trump did better in terms of gaining more of the black vote and more of the Hispanic vote. Why do you think more minority groups decided to vote for Trump in 2020 than decided to vote for him in 2016?
That's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. Because I'm really active on social media, and I've seen like a lot of videos of like Hispanic people like holding up Trump signs, and like, to me, like, I don't know if it's propaganda, if it's authentic, if this is like, you know, I haven't really taken the time to look at the numbers and see, but I'm pretty sure, like, based on what you're saying, that is true, that there's like this increase. And I don't know, I think like a lot of these people who are, and I hate to put it this way, but I feel like they're uneducated. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Trump kind of tried to do this like little push in those areas because he knew he needed that support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, promised these people certain things that he really would never have gone through on. And I think that we've seen that a lot through his presidency, where he's promised these things and he sits in front of people and he says, like, oh, big things are coming, you know, this is coming, it's coming, and it never comes. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, when you go into certain areas, it's easier to persuade certain people who aren't educated. And mm-hmm. sadly, a lot of, you know, Latino and African-American communities, they're, you know, are uneducated, you know. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, his team made sure to put special emphasis on these areas where they know that they can persuade these people into thinking that, you know, this is a good person who's really truly looking out for your best interest, which isn't true.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that is one thing that I honestly will give the Trump camp, is the fact that they did start really going into these communities and trying to at least persuade these people. Now, whether or not they were actually going to make do on their promises was one thing, but that was one thing that I think was sort of lacking in the Biden campaign trail. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that the Biden campaign didn't do as much outreach? And do you think that was negligent on their part?
I don't think it was negligent. I think that Biden already knew that he had, like, majority of African Americans persuaded to vote for him. Mm-hmm. He actually, like, made a comment, I don't know it verbatim, but I think he said something along the lines of, like,
if you don't vote for me, you're not black.
You're not black. Yeah, like, so it's like, he knew, he already knew. It, mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't truly a need for it. Like, most black people were going to vote for Biden because reality is most black people don't like Trump. Like, yeah. We see him as prejudiced and ignorant, and nobody wants a president under, you know, leading a country that has those characteristics. And I don't know. I just feel like Biden kind of just laughed at that kind of thing, where it's like, these people are going to vote for me. I don't have to, you know, put extra effort into this. Let me focus on other areas where I really need to truly make an impact.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
If, let's say, somebody gave Biden or the Democrats a magic wand, that they could do anything, what are some changes that you would like to see them either make into law or just have as a general practice that would help people in the black community?
I definitely think that it stems first from, like, education. I definitely want to see these communities have better education in place. I want to see, like, inner city schools have better programs. I think that we need to start from, like, the ground up, honestly. And that really just starts with education. Because you have to realize that, like, a lot of these African-American kids who go to, like, public schools, you know, they come from homes where, and this isn't, like, everyone, but, like, these, like, inner city school kids, like, they come from homes where, like, almost like schools are, like, a break from reality sort of thing. So I think that, like, one, you need teachers that genuinely care about these kids. Two, you need a safe environment for these kids. And three, we need to put as much emphasis in their education as we do in these private schools, where it's majority white kids and, you know, they have the best of the best teachers, and, you know, they have teachers who are willing to stay after school with these kids. Mm-hmm. And granted, you'll find, like, 4 or 5 teachers who really genuinely care about these kids and will stay after school and really try to help them grow as individuals, etc. But, like, these schools don't have teachers that really care. Like, you know, they have to deal with a lot, honestly. Like, I went to Columbus City Schools when I was in third grade. So I was, like, at the age where I was able to, like, I was young, but I was still able to know, be fully aware of everything going on around me sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And after third grade, I immediately we moved into the suburbs, and the education system's so different between the two. I feel like if you're smart and you go to an inner city school, like, I excelled in Columbus City Schools. Like, I was, like, top 1%. Like, I was, like, they were, like, you're smart. Like, we're going to put so much emphasis on you. We're going to put you in separate classes and separate you from, like, other, you know, kids. I was in, like, all these, like, I think it was called, like, talented and gifted tag or something like that, where they, like, pretty much separated me and like all the other kids who they knew were like smarter than the rest. And we like had a different curriculum and like they were really preparing us for college. Whereas the other kids, they were just like, you guys are like a nuisance and you guys are like, you know, we don't really care. Like, we're just going to do what we want. But when I ended up going to Hamilton Township, and it was like a completely different, just a different vibe. It was like every student had to succeed, basically, whether black or white or, you know, anything in between. Like, you had to succeed. They were like one of the top schools in Ohio. So it was like they focused so much on you passing. I think at the time it was the OGT. So it was basically like they were preparing you to take this test. And majority of everyone passed it that went to Hamilton. Whereas you look at the proficiency tests in these Columbus City schools, and passing rates are significantly lower than in suburban schools. So I think that that's like kind of where it stems from. It's just like education, making sure that these kids are properly educated, that they receive the same level of education that these white schools receive. Like, look at like Bexley High School and like Hamilton and Canal Winchester and all these different schools where, you know, most of these kids are graduating. No, you don't really see many people dropping out. Like, and if they are, like, they're not really submerged in, you know, the school. Like, most of the time, like, a lot of people are like involved in suburban schools. Like, you're going to see them be a part of a sport or be, you know, in AP classes, like student government, like some sort of extracurricular activity where it like makes them want to come to school. And, you know, and you think of like Columbus City schools, you think of more like, okay, you have these kids where they're basically telling them that the only way to succeed is if you're good in football or basketball. Like, they don't even have like soccer or lacrosse or volleyball or like all these other schools where, you know, majority white kids are getting scholarships. So it's like either you're going to be a little black boy who plays basketball, you're going to be a little black boy who plays football, and that's like your only way out unless you're extremely intelligent. Yeah,
I love that you said that, because it was making me think of even like my experience. I grew up in Springfield, Ohio, and there were two main high schools there known as North and South. So one was on the north side, one was on the south side. And what's interesting is that the year before I went into high school, they combined both of the schools, and they called it Springfield High School. And it's this immaculate, state-of-the-art building. Over 2,000 students attend. You have literally seven different languages you can learn. There are so many sports activities. And like, it was kind of amazing to see that once they combined the two schools, the people from the South Side and South High School were able to actually get so much more, because you had the rich white parents on the North Side wanting to invest in the school to make sure that their kids got a good education, right? So you're seeing levies passed constantly. You're seeing money put into the school from these rich white parents. And like, a lot more people were able to succeed. There was one year, I think, where the entire class of 500 seniors all were going to some kind of secondary education.
Wow.
It was insane. But it was because they decided to combine both of those that everybody got that fair chance. And you're exactly right. Let's move on to jobs and just occupations in general. What can we do in the job sector for black people?
That's interesting. Opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first word that comes to mind is opportunity. We have to give African-American workers the same opportunity that we give white workers. Like, I'm going to just be completely blunt. I worked at Nationwide, and I didn't have the best experience there, where I was probably one of, like, the best people on my team. And I would notice that other people would get opportunities before me. And I will always wonder, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, you know, it doesn't. Why would this person who puts in half the work, half the effort, get a promotion before I got a promotion? Like, I will always, like, I never really, like, thought that I would experience like workplace like prejudices or, you know, be a part of that. But like in retrospect, I always like think about it like that never made sense. And there's really no justification for it outside of the fact that there are limited opportunities for African-Americans in the workplace. So I think that we have to be more willing to give African-American people positions of leadership. It's okay to give a black person a raise and, you know, that's fine, but why not have them in leadership roles? Why, you know, at these huge companies are, you know, all of the VPs and, you know, executive members Caucasian? Why are there no African-American people on these panels? So I just think that it stems from creating opportunity and, you know, being willing to place African-Americans in those positions.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to those people who oftentimes are like, well, if you force workplaces to be more diverse, then you're taking away the jobs from people who are most deserving?
That's like complete bullshit, because the reality is like we are ever changing, we are ever growing, and diversity is one of the leading factors to success. Because look at Nationwide, it's so great, whatever, but like you have departments who have leaders who are the same, all, you know, blue collar white men, or white collar white men, excuse me. And it's like they're like carbon copies of each other. And these people think the same, they want the same policies, they want, you know, the workflow to be the same. But then like something happens where like, you know, this little Latina girl or this little black girl or this you know, little Southeast Asian girl comes in, and it's like they come with like new ideas, and then it's like, oh shit, reality check, like our way isn't always right. And that actually happened with me at Nationwide, where, you know, they were doing something for so long, they didn't even realize like that you could convert an Excel spread or a PDF to an Excel spreadsheet. So they're manually entering in all these policies. And it's like, I come in and I'm like, you guys realize that you can convert a PDF to an Excel spreadsheet and all these numbers will be there for you to copy and paste into the system. And, you know, we could get this moving so much faster. And it was like the biggest shock ever. It was literally that little moment led to them developing a whole entire system where they had me as a temp sitting down with an engineer to develop a completely different system to automate broker-dealer changes. And I'm like, if you guys would have continued to hire these people that are just like you, no one would have ever been able to come in and be like, hey, let's do this and watch how it improves. So that diversity is like so important and necessary in growth, period. Like, there's no way around it.
Yeah. To shift to a topic, which I'm sure probably isn't pretty to talk about, but here's what I hate about discussing this. We've known for the longest time what we've needed to do. And, and as you've said, in terms of occupation, people just aren't willing to change and aren't willing to change policy. What can we do about police brutality, especially against black people? What are some things that we can change?
First of all, I think that a lot of this police brutality stems from fear. So we have to get rid of this narrative that black people are dangerous and black people are ghetto and black people are, you know, poor. We have to get rid of this stigma, and we have to understand that when we go in with these biases, they create that fear, and that fear is what causes that reaction. So if we can eliminate that fear and that bias, then we're less likely to have those type of reactions in those situations. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of cops, you know, I think a lot of these white male cops go into situations with black men, and they think like the first thing in their head that pops up is like, dangerous black guy. I have, you know, a daughter at home that I have to get back to. So regardless of what, I have to defend myself and make sure that I am, you know, getting home safe to my kid. And the first thing they go to do is draw their gun, you know, when Lord knows what it could have been. It could have, you know, just been a simple conversation, or, you know, going out with a more civil approach and trying to really just interact with them as if they're a human and not an animal, or, you know, someone on the streets. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's just like the very base of it, is getting rid of those biases and, you know, understanding that black people, especially black men, are not as like harmful and dangerous as, you know, media projects. Or, you know, something that really bothers me when these situations happen is I notice that people will dig up pictures from like years and years ago where, you know, this kid was like, you know, say this like 25-year-old boy was shot and killed by a police. So they'll find pictures from them in like middle school where they're like throwing up a gang sign with their friends and like with like a do-rag on or something, and, you know, they'll push this narrative that this person was like a gang member, a gangster, and like all these different things. And, you know, that recently just happened with the boy who got shot in Columbus, where, you know, they found these pictures on his mom's Facebook and was like trying to paint this picture. Like, regardless, even if this person did gang bang or whatever the case may have been, that doesn't justify you taking their life. Because the cops didn't know that about them. The cops didn't go on their social media before that interaction and look up the fact that they took this picture 10 years ago with them throwing up a gang sign. You know, it's just ignorance. And I think it's super unnecessary to paint that picture of them while they're deceased. Mm-hmm. Like, again, I think that that is what causes this sort of division. Because then you have white people who get on social media and justify the cop killing them because of this picture from 10 years ago where this kid is holding up a gang sign, and they're like, oh, he was a thug, he was dangerous. That's that bias, that's that ignorance, that's that prejudice talk that, you know, I think just stems from people just being racist. There's no other word for it. Like, if you can really like justify or try to justify someone being murdered based on the fact that they, you know, were a thug or whatever the case may have been, you're racist. Like, there's nothing around that. Like, you're ignorant and you're racist, and you are just trying to find a reason to project that with, you're trying to justify your racism. You're trying to, you know, make yourself feel better for being racist by saying, well, they're a gangster, they deserved it, or, you know, they, you know, flash this gun, or, you know, the cops were, Blue Lives Matter, they were just protecting themselves, you know. It's like you're justifying ignorance, and you're, you know, I don't know, it just bothers me, like, when they do that, when they, yeah, you know, paint these negative pictures of these people after they've died.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I would completely agree with you. The another thing that I really hate is, like, I'll watch the, like the recordings of the things that go down. I hate it, but I watch them, and it's like the cops are like freaking ballistic. Like, they're out of their minds. Like, literally the guy will be sitting in his car with his 6-year-old in the back seat reaching for his registration, which I keep in my glove box too.
Right.
And they think they're like reaching for a gun or something. Like, and why is it that they instantly pull out their gun? Like, I know they have other things, like a taser. Like, I've seen so many police training videos of police officers getting tased and falling on a mat. Like, where is your taser? Like, why aren't we using these other instruments if we really think that somebody is a threat? Like, why do we just go to the gun first? Like, oh, I hate it so much. But
that, and I think that just stems back to what I just said, where it's like they have this image in their head of these people just being so dangerous, you know, and that's just this bias, you know, and because of that bias and because of that fear, that is why people are being murdered. That's why they're reaching for these guns, because again, you have, you know, this cop who is thinking in their head that this person is so dangerous, this person's gonna, you know, kill me. This person's going to shoot me first. Like, I have to shoot them first. I have to, you know, get back to my daughter. I have to get back to my family. I have to defend myself. And a lot of the times that's not even the case. Like you said, like, this person may just be reaching for their registration. They may be scared out of their freaking mind. Like, you know, a lot of people who are in that situation that are Black, like, they're thinking like, oh my God, like, this is it. Like, this may be the last time, like, I get to see my family and, you know, these, you know, different things. So it's like, when you're in that situation, I don't think you are really, like, conscious of, like, what you're doing, like, in terms of, like, your movements and, like, really, like, thinking. Like, you're so nervous, like, you're not thinking about the fact that if you reach in your glove compartment that a cop may perceive that as you grabbing a gun. You're just thinking, like, let me grab my, you know, registration and get this over with, sort of thing. So, again, it's that fear of, you know, Black people, especially Black men, where it's like, they're dangerous, and, you know, so let me, you know, pull my gun just in case, you know, sort of thing, which is, in most cases, not necessary.
Yeah. And to kind of look forward in terms of things to look forward to, I guess, as we post this podcast, I'm sure things are developing with the Trump supporters who have been rioting and looting and being terrorists. Do you believe that there is any hope in changing these people's mindsets in terms of... Do you really think you really think it's not possible?
No. These people are just... They're racist, they're prejudiced, and they're very ignorant. Mm-hmm. And it's so weird to me that, you know, this patriotic mindset of like, oh, you know, if I do this, I'm, you know, the all American, like, you know, it's so corny to me. Like, I you know, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, Obetz, Ohio, wherever, and a lot of the kids that I went to school with who were white would have the little Confederate flag, and I'm like, why do you have this flag? You're from Obetz, Ohio, you're not from the South. You're uneducated. You don't even know what this flag represents. Why do you carry it around? Why do you have it? And I can't think of one person that I grew up with that could actually justify why. Mm. It was a pride thing. And, you know, this, like, sort of like, I'm all American, you know, it's about my country. And have these people don't even know what an amendment is, you know. These people can't even name 10 presidents, you know. These people can't name 2 treaties. These people know absolutely nothing about American history, but they look at their family who's racist and they pick up these behaviors from them, you know. This 80-year-old grandpa who doesn't like Black people and who has this Confederate flag and, you know, may have been from the South but moved to Ohio, and they're raised. This is, a lot of this is like how you're raised. So of course, like, these kids, like, who are uneducated, they don't know what they're talking about, they don't know anything about American history. All they know is pride and, you know, this American pride. And again, it's like, you can't make people like that change. It's, you can, but it's very hard. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, like, a lot of times, like, the only way for a white person who's so consumed by that is if, like, they have that rebellious daughter or that rebellious son who has a kid with a Black person, and then they're forced to face it, their racism and their prejudices, because they now have a mixed grandchild. So now they have to look at it from a different perspective and go, okay, I have a Black grandchild. Like, now I have to, like, understand this experience. And I'm bringing this up because I actually know a few people who have went through this, where, you know, these 60, 70-year-old grandparents are racist, and then they have these mixed grandchildren, and then they're like, holy crap, my grandkids are being treated like crap. Why? Because they're Black. And then they see how they've treated Black people, and it makes it, something clicks. So it's like, it's a shame that that has to happen for you. It's a click. So it's like, what can we do to make it click? Like, what has to happen for you to make it click. Like, does this white person have to, you know, find one black person that they grow really close with and something happened to them for it to click? Like, what is it that makes it click? So I think really, like, that's the only way that these people change is if something clicks. And, you know, it could be like that situation where it's like, okay, they have now have a black grandchild, or they have someone who they really love that's black that, you know, experiences this, or a coworker that they really like experiences this. Like, it's very hard to change their mindset.
Well, I hope that's not true, but I mean, I am inclined to believe you only because it's very difficult. I'm reminded today on Martin Luther King Day that, you know, a lot of people back then really, I mean, even people who are alive today, right? Like who were against, you know, having white kids ride on the same buses as black kids. Like, even something as simple as that, like,
yeah.
And, you know, it's just common practice now. So I really do think, I think you're right. I think not only does it come with changing hearts and minds, but it has to stem from policy first. Mm-hmm. Because if policy is the first to change, people accept it as fact, people accept it as law, and then they can deal with their own prejudice after that. It's kind of like what happened with gay marriage in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so commonplace now. People don't even really think about, like, the fact that it was illegal almost even just 7 years ago.
Right.
But thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts and insight. I really appreciate it. And thank you again for listening to the podcast.